Lost and Found. Found and Lost and Lost Found.
Hallo und willkommen zur Lost and Found Ausgabe im September 2017. In den nächsten 120 Minuten gibt es einen Ausflug nach Schottland. Dort genau gesagt in zwei Brennereien. Die eine liegt auf der Isle of Mull und nennt sich Tobermory. Und die zweite, ab 1 Uhr morgens erwartet euch die in der Sendung, ist Glen Scotia. Und die liegt auf der Halbinsel Kintyre in der Stadt Campbelltown. Ich wünsche viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören. Am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. Meine Schottlandreise in diesem Sommer führte mich auch wieder gezielt in einige Brennereien, in denen Single Malt Whisky gebrannt wird. Single Malt, vielleicht kurz als Erklärung, muss mehrere Bedingungen erfüllen. Erstmal, der Whisky darf nur aus einer Brennerei stammen. Das heißt, alle Fässer, die später in Flaschen abgefüllt werden in Schottland, müssen genau aus dieser Brennerei stammen. Es ist also kein Verschnitt aus mehreren Whisky-Sorten von verschiedenen Brennereien, was ein Blend sein würde. Zum Zweiten wird das Ganze aus Getreide gebrannt und nicht aus irgendwelchem, sondern aus gemälzter Gerste. Als weitere Zutaten sind dann eigentlich nur noch für den Gärprozess die Hefe und selbstverständlich Wasser erlaubt. Daraus wird im Großen und Ganzen der Whisky destilliert. Damit es dann schottischer Single Malt Whisky wird, muss er nicht nur in Schottland produziert werden, sondern dort auch in Fässern reifen und bis zu seiner Abfüllung in Flaschen in Schottland bleiben und mindestens, wie es so schön heißt, 3 Jahre gelagert werden. Im Regelfall heißt das bei den Brennereien 3 Jahre und 1 Tag, damit es tatsächlich schottischer Single Malt Whisky wird. Zur Isle of Mull ging es mit dem Schiff aus der Stadt Oban vom Festland aus. Auf der Isle of Mull angekommen war es dann noch so ungefähr eine 40 Minuten Busfahrt, bis wir schließlich in Tobermory gelandet sind und der Busbahnhof war direkt vor der Brennerei Tobermory. Und auch hier vorab noch ein paar Infos zur Brennerei auf Deutsch, bevor es dann zur Führung im englischen Original geht. Die einzige Brennerei auf der Isle of Mull nennt sich Tobermory. Gebrannt werden dort 2 verschiedene Whisky-Sorten. Einmal der Lichig, das ist ein rauchiger Whisky. Da wird das Malz über Torffeuer getrocknet und entsprechend rauchig. Und der Tobermory. Und der hat einen eher süßlichen Geschmack, ist auf jeden Fall rauchfrei. Gegründet wurde die Brennerei in Tobermory im Jahr 1795. Wie viele Brennereien hat auch Tobermory eine bewegte Geschichte hinter sich und erst 1989 wurde die Brennerei wieder so eröffnet, dass auch der erste Single Malt als Tobermory erschien. Die Brennerei hat eine Jahreskapazität von 1 Million Litern, die allerdings wie bei so vielen Destillen nie erreicht wird, weil es ja zwischendurch Ruhephasen gibt oder gereinigt werden muss etc. Und jetzt wird es höchste Zeit für einen Besuch in der Brennerei Tobermory auf der Isle of Mull. Viel Vergnügen dabei!
My name is Gilvanas, or you can call me Z. If you have any questions, just fire those away. But as I understood, you've been to quite a few distilleries already, so I won't be boring you with that same spiel over and over again that you hear in other distilleries. Tobermory Distillery has been here since 1798. It was originally founded by merchant John Sinclair. Back in the day, original name of the distillery actually used to be Lichek. Which the name comes from Gaelic, so all of our bottles, smoky whiskies, are called Lichegs, not Ledaigs. Any of you will be saying Ledaig at the end of the tour. I don't think you'll be getting your drums at the end. But the name means safe haven or safe harbor. So mainly it's due to the bay that we have over here, but from time to time I like to tell people it's more because of a free parking that we have just outside the door. We tend to buy it. the name has been changed in the late 70s to Tobermory Distillery, and for a brief period of time they were producing 2 different malts under the same name of Tobermory. So I guess they decided that they needed to differentiate between the 2 whiskies, so this is why we have that strange name on one of our bottles. Pretty much, over here we'll be producing 2 different kinds of whiskey, smoky and non-smoky. So all bottles with name of Tobermory will be our non-smoky variety, and with the Lichek on will be smoky whiskies, And today you'll be trying four. Basically, we have only four whiskies at the moment. So it will be Tobermory 10, Tobermory 21-year-old with Manzanilla Sherry cask finish. And from the smoky variety, Lichak 10 years old and Lichak 18 years old with Oloroso Sherry cask maturation finish of 2 years. In our production, we'll be using two different kinds of barley. Unpeated barley will be coming from east side of the country. Usually it comes from Berwick, and we're using Simpson's malt barley. And peated ones will be coming from Port Ellen, which is located on Isla. Over there, I think you all know that there are quite a few whiskey producers. And then I'm assuming there's quite a few that like smoky whiskeys. Basically, usually over here, when we receive a batch of barley, we usually receive it by trucks. And our production throughout the year will be divided into 50-50 ratio. Usually for the first half of the year, we'll be producing our Tobermory variety, non-smoky whiskeys, and after summer shutdown, we usually enter our smoky whiskey production period. But at the time being, I think you've been informed that we're currently in shutdown period of about 2 years due to some refurbishments, so some of the stuff will be replaced in upcoming 2 years. And I'm gonna tell you all about it when we get to those bits, especially to the still house. And even though the distillery has been here itself for a little bit more than 200 years, it hasn't been continuously operational. There were quite a few silent periods, few bankruptcies, and also ownership tended to change quite a few times throughout those years as well. And last and most significant shutdown period lasted between 1930s up to 1972, so for about 42 years. Main causes for that were World War II, Prohibition in the States, and Depression back then. All those factors impacted industry quite a bit at that time. And in 1972, when the distillery was reopened, it was refurbished with the new equipment at that time. So pretty much all of the machinery that you're gonna be seeing today has been here since then. Only a couple of things have been replaced a few years back in a still house, but as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm gonna tell you a little bit more about those things when we're gonna get over there. So if some of you were hoping to see a lot of fancy modern technology, I'll have to disappoint you since you won't find any computers or any of that sort over here. But yeah, do you have any questions so far? Otherwise, we'll be heading out to see the rest of the distillery because I'm pretty sure you're quite...
What's your output?
Every year we'll be producing somewhere around 750 to 800,000 liters of spirits. So basically, if you compare us with the larger producers, you can say that we sort of pale against them, but as far as small distilleries go, I'd say that we're not that insignificant with such a production capacity. If we pushed our limits all the way up to the top in terms of our production, we could produce every year 1 million liters, but that would mean that we would be functioning 24/7 nonstop all year around. And main factor is why we produce as much as we produce is just because we're quite a small distillery in terms of size, and we just simply don't have enough space to install additional washbacks. At the time being, we have only four.
How many parts per million?
The smoky whiskey will be peated up to 39 phenol parts per million. So it's not as heavily peated as most of those Isla malts, but you still get quite a bit of those smoky characters, not as medicinal as, for instance, Lagavulin, I would say, which tends to have quite a lot of those TCP sort of notes, which puts a lot of people from smoky whiskies. In our case, it tends to have a little bit more those of earthy, woody, bonfire aromas, but it's relatively smooth and easygoing whiskey. All right, so in terms of photography, if you want to take pictures, feel free to do so. Since we're not in production, so nothing will explode, hopefully. Just be careful not to lose anything from your hands because all of the distillery has metal-grated floors, and yeah. I can pretty much guarantee that if you lose something, it won't be in one piece afterwards. And I would greatly appreciate if you could restrain yourself and don't turn any handles as well as we go around, all right?
So, okay.
But we're not in production, so there's... Though washbacks are pretty full with water and
other
than
that.
All right, so usually on the delivery, when we're gonna get a batch of barley, we usually receive it by trucks, and the truck will simply just stop in front of the gate, and on the delivery, it's gonna start pouring all that barley in a small conveyor belt. And when we're gonna start production, all of it's gonna be ending up inside our mill room. At the time being, it's closed, but anyway, inside there's only two chunks of machinery, which are pretty basic. There's weighing machine and a malt mill. And for production run, we're always going to be using 5 tons of barley. And usually for every week's production, we'll need somewhere around 25 to 35 tons of it. And afterwards, we're gonna just transfer all of that barley to the mill, where it's all of it's gonna be grinded into the grist. And grist is essentially, as you already may know, that it's just a rough flour. And this is done because it will be easier to extract those sugars from it in the mash house. Yeah, do you have any questions? Because I'm cutting a lot of corners right now.
Yeah. Consistency means 10% flour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and exactly like because if we have a little bit more of that flour, basically that flour, when we're doing the mashing, it might start clogging the pipes when we're emptying out, so it's pretty much the same as anywhere else, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. All right, so
the malt, it comes from this ferry or does it come from Craig?
No, it comes from Craignore, so it has
that road.
Yeah. Oh, you would see, and this is our drive hopper. You would see the truck driver when he comes in with that truck. He does amazing things with that truck. Apparently somebody saw him bringing the truck in, and they said we should just film it and put it on YouTube. It's a matter of seconds. It's just like comes in at 20 miles per hour or something like that, pushes it, takes the draft. But generally, after mashing will be finished, all of that, as you already may know, after we're done with the mashing, we'll have quite a bit of that draft residue. And we just gonna load it on that truck, and the draft will be delivered to the cheese farm, where it's gonna be fed to cows. Cows give milk, they produce cheese, they put some leachick in it, and you're gonna have some nice whiskey cheese that you can try at the end of the whole process. But I think that those cows will be starving for upcoming two years since we're not producing. All right, so just right up the stairs.
Oh, how many distilleries do you have under your belt so far?
You mean this tour or the last ones? Something like 28 or
32. Well, we still have some around 70 distilleries to go or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, if you want, you can have a closer look inside our mash tun, and I'll meet you just around the corner since there's a little bit more space where, that we can fit us all in.
So, mesh tun, alles leer hier, alles sauber, clean.
Is it a copper top and stainless steel inside?
Yes, yeah. A lot of people ask me why it's made out of copper, because nowadays most distilleries, they're relatively new ones, or they renewed their equipment. In most cases, they will be made out of steel. Some distilleries may have even mesh, open mesh tuns. In Deanston Distillery, they tend to have that one as well. But over here, I usually tell the people it's because it's pretty old piece of machinery, but it's still very reliable. After we're gonna get all that grist, all of it's afterwards gonna be going in via our grist hopper inside our 5-ton mash tun. And over here, we're mashing that grist three times at three different temperatures. First one is done at 64 degrees Celsius, second one at 78, and last one at 90 degrees. So essentially, those higher temperatures helps us to extract maximum amounts of sugars. And by the end, we're just gonna be getting that sugary water that we call worts. And the water that we'll be using for our production will be coming from Tobermory Locks, which are located just up the hill. If later on you're still gonna have a chance to go to Derwig or Calgary, you're gonna be passing those locks on your way over there. So basically, we have direct pipeline, and that water will be used from everything, from cleaning up of the plant, for mashing, distillation. Technically, that water still gives slight amounts of peatiness to our Tobermory whiskies as well, but it would be somewhere around 1 and 2 phenol parts per million. So, but I would say that those sort of tiny bits of peatiness is quite practically near to impossible to pick up when you're trying the whiskey. But if you do, that means that you have quite an exceptional tasting buds, and perhaps you would like to change your career path with those. After we're gonna get all of that worts, before we're gonna transfer it next door to our tun room where we're gonna start our fermentation process, all of it needs to be cooled down to 20 degrees Celsius, which will be done using heat exchanger, which is that blue chunk of machinery just right over there. And afterwards, all of that worts will be going via our underback, and underback is essentially just a huge copper filter that helps us to get rid of some of that grist residue from the worts, because we want it to be as clear as possible before we start our fermentation process. And we'll roughly need somewhere around 8 to 9 hours to fully complete all these three mashings, and afterwards another production run will begin. And that worts that we're gonna get after third mashing, all of that water will be reused for next production run's first mashing, basically at 64 degrees Celsius. I hope you're gonna be paying attention. There's gonna be a pop quiz for you coming up. All right, so after we'll be done with the mashing, all of that worts will be ending up in our washbacks. Each and every tank is made from Oregon pine, and they've been here since 1972. And also each and every tank will have a capacity of 27,000 liters. You can see throughout the floors as well how big these tanks are. And to start our fermentation, we're just going to add 100 kilograms of yeast, which will start gradually dissolving those sugars, and bit by bit we'll be getting some ethanol, which is basically alcohol. But at this stage, I would advise, if we would be doing some fermentation just now, I would advise you not to inhale it too much, because a part of ethanol, what we'll be getting is quite a lot of carbon dioxide, and I don't think you would like to get that kick afterwards. And usually these tanks will naturally warm up somewhere in the range of 28 to 32 degrees Celsius as fermentation goes on, and they say that optimal temperature for yeast to dissolve the sugars are somewhere in between 25 and 35 degrees. And if those temperatures would go above that point, that heat may enable the yeast to sort of start growing out of control, and it may actually ruin that strong beer that we want to get at the end of this process. In other distilleries, what you may notice is that these tanks may have some additional equipment installed in them, which essentially helps them to scrape the foam levels down, but it also helps them to monitor those temperatures inside those tanks. But in our case, since we don't have any machinery inside those tanks, we're just going to be using few handfuls of special soap. We just throw it in during fermentation, and that soap basically just dissolves all of that foam down, and that's how we're going to keep it settled during fermentation. And over here, we're doing fermentation 90 hours. I would say that is quite long on the longer side as fermentations goes for single malt producers. But as most of you know, there are some other distilleries that will be doing it over 100 hours as well. And at the end of this process, we're basically just going to be getting just a strong beer, which will be somewhere around 7% in strength. Generally, that wash tends to taste quite sweet, especially if we're producing spirits for Tobermory whiskey. If we would be producing it for the smoky variety Lichaks, a part of those sweet characters, it may contain quite a bit of bitterness in it. So basically, you can already tell the differences in flavors and characters at the end of fermentation, depending on what type of barley are being used for the production. And afterwards, after those 90 hours, all of that wash will be transferred next door to our still house, where we're gonna start our distillation process. And afterwards, the guy's gonna be cleaning up these tanks using pressured hot water to prepare them for upcoming fermentations. And all of the distilleries that will be using wooden wash bags during silent periods, these will always be filled up with water, since we want to keep the wood moist, because if it gets too dry, we may get quite a bit of leakage appearing pretty fast. And some of these tanks will be replaced in upcoming 2 years' time. The new ones will also gonna be made out of Oregon pine, and usually these tanks will also gonna be made either from pine trees or large trees, generally because these are very tall trees.
Will there be more of the wash tanks?
No, I'm afraid not. I don't think that they will be expanding the distillery, because that's part of the building that you can see throughout the window, basically. All that section used to be used for germination and malting of the barley before that last shutdown period. But nowadays we're just using it for the storage of it. All right, so we'll be heading to see our still house. I think this is gonna be the most interesting part for you guys.
Our water sort just went down. That would pretty much look like a huge pile of mud.
Oh, nice.
So after all fermentation will be finished, all of that wash will be ending up in that red tank over there, the wash charger tank. And as you've noticed so far, that the shape, the size, numbers of the stills will be different in each and every distillery, but one thing that they're all gonna have in common is that they're all gonna be made out of copper, because copper acts as a purifier during distillation, and it basically helps to eliminate sulfur from the spirits as distillation goes on. But as far as the shape of the stills goes, ours are quite unusual, and not because of their height, but especially because of their line arms, because these are very steep. Normally, what you see in other distilleries, those will be pointing horizontally or even a little bit downwards. But those steep line arms helps us get, they will help us to attain a lot more light-bodied character style spirits at the end of distillation due to heavier reflux process, which basically means that when we're gonna start getting vapors out of the wash or the spirits, only the purest vapors will be going through that steep line arm, and heavier particles in those vapors sort of goes back down to the same still, and in a way it's being distilled twice in one go, thus being eliminated from those vapors, and in turn providing us with that light-bodied character style spirits at the end of distillation. And normally I would say that those will be a little bit easier and nicer to drink, because they won't have those strong spirity ethanolish flavors in them. And over here we're using diesel boilers to heat those stills up. We normally need to reach a temperature of somewhere around 80 to 84 degrees Celsius until we're gonna start getting those vapors. And we're also doing distillation over here two times, as it is most common practice for single malt producers. Only, I think in Scotland there's only a couple of distilleries that does triple distillations for their single malts. One of them is Auchentoshan, which I'm pretty sure you're all aware. And the reason why they're distilling it twice, it's mainly because they want to retain some of that wash character into their final spirits, because the more you distill it, the more of those you'll be losing. And when we're gonna start our distillation, all of that wash will be going to the first and the last stills. These are our wash stills. And at the end of that distillation run, what we'll be getting is low wines, which will be spirits ranging somewhere around 20 to 25%. And afterwards, all of these low wines will be flowing via right-hand side chamber in our spirit safe. Over there, you'll see hydrometer and barometer that essentially helps stillmen to monitor whatever is coming out from those stills are at the right strength and at the right temperatures. And those low wines will be ending up in the blue tank beneath the safe, where it's gonna be mixed with those stronger spirits that were used in the previous distillation runs. So portion of those will be always recycled for upcoming distillations to mix them with low wines. And as that will happen, alcohol concentration of those low wines will go up to 28%. And then it will be ready for the second and final distillation run. And afterwards, those will be going to the second and the third stills, which are our high spirit stills. And after that run, first spirits that will be coming out from after second distillation pretty much are rocket fuel. And apparently they say that if you try too much of those, you may actually go blind, since those will be containing quite a bit of ethanol in it. And usually the concentration of them will be somewhere around 95 to 98%. So all of those high spirits, for example, will be going via four-shot chamber, and it will be ending up in the left-hand side blue tank, where all of it's gonna be mixed with weaker spirits. And when we're gonna fill that blue tank over there, we're gonna just transfer all of those spirits again to the second and the third stills. It basically helps us to maximize our production capacity. If I personally would be making some moonshine at home, I would just throw away those four shots, those very volatile spirits. And we're gonna keep on distilling those spirits until we're gonna reach alcohol concentration of somewhere around 73 to 77%. And when we're gonna reach that point, basically those will be our final spirits that will be put into the casks for maturation. I like to call those spirits high quality moonshine, because you get quite a decent dram straight away when you reach that point. When we're gonna reach that point, stillman just gonna turn the handles above the safe to get those spirits flowing via two inner pots in that chamber and via black pipes. Those will be ending up in our spirit receiving tank, where it's gonna be waiting for a pickup to arrive, since we don't do casking and we don't do bottling on site. So from time to time, we're gonna have tanker coming in, which will pick those spirits up. And first hand, those spirits will be delivered to Deanston Distillery, where all of it's gonna be put into the casks for maturation. And afterwards, most of those casks will be transported to Boonahaven Distillery, which is on Isla, for maturation. We're using those two distilleries because these are our sister distilleries that comes from the same group. Although some of those casks will be brought over here for maturation, but simply because we don't have large enough warehouse, we need to send them elsewhere. And at the end of maturation period, all of those casks will be transported just outside the Glasgow, where everything's going to be put into the bottles and ready for distribution. And a couple of years back, we replaced first two stills, and the other two have been here since 1972. The reason why you'll need to replace them from time to time is because copper gets thinner and thinner every year. So basically, no matter what you're going to be doing, you're still bound to get some leakage appearing after quite a few years of operations. The new stills that will be coming in, they cannot vary in shape, size, or the angle of the line arms, because if they do, that would impact the way vapors are flowing during distillation, and we simply would not be getting the same character and style to our spirits. And when we spent almost 50 years building up our brand, I don't think we want any variations in that department. And back in the day, they used to store all of the spirits basically on site. And that building just across the street of the Tobermory Distillery, the old Bond House, it used to be a warehouse of the distillery, but it was sold in early 80s to Argyll and Bute Council. And afterwards, it has been converted into a living flats. So I'm still wondering whether there's some goodies stuck in the walls from time to time. Do you have any questions? It just helps to release the steam. It's not from the inside, but it goes outside basically. Yeah, pretty much for the pressure. All right, so if some of you want, you can have a closer look at our spirit safe, and afterwards we'll be heading out to our warehouse. And the more practical bit of the
tour is closing by.
Du, Stefan?
Ja, Harry?
Wir haben einen dringenden Fall, Stefan.
Dann hol doch schon mal den Wagen, Harry.
Du, Stefan?
Ja, Harry?
Wir haben keinen Wagen mehr, Stefan.
Ja, aber Harry, das kann doch nicht. Wir brauchen doch...
Warum ist nur am Stefan, Ende des Geldes immer noch so viel Ja
dafür verantwortlich?
Radio Z
Harry?
Existiert durch
Idee,
euch.
Vom ZDF wegzugehen.
Spenden ja, und Mitgliedsbeiträge sind Harry, steuerlich absetzbar.
Stefan?
Harry?
Werdet Mitglied bei Radio Z im Internet unter www.radio-z.net oder unter Nürnberg 45 00 3x die 6. Danke, damit Stefan und Harry auch weiterhin dringende Fälle lösen können. Radio Z rettet auch dich.
And we'll be heading just over here.
Most likely not the largest whiskey warehouse in Scotland. As you all are aware by now, most likely, that for spirits to be called whiskey, they need to be mature for at least 3 years in oak casks, at least in Scotland, but that legislation may be different in different countries. For instance, in Australia, those spirits need to be mature for only 2 years until it can be called whiskey. And all of the spirits that we'll be producing over here, all of it's going to be spending some time in the bourbon casks. And the reason why we get them from the States is because it's a lot cheaper for us, since bourbon producers are limited to one maturation cycle and only in the new casks. But I heard that they currently trying to shift those legislations that they could reuse their casks for bourbon production as well. So there perhaps we'll see a shift in where we'll be getting our main casks in the future. And all of these ones, until the end of the warehouse, these are bourbon casks. And over here, we mature Tobermory whiskey from 2012. I assume that those will be 10-year-old expressions, so another more or less 5 years to go for them. And during maturation, these casks will be staying still. We won't be turning them, as opposed to wine producers. And we can reuse these casks a couple of times. And when we're going to deem them unusable, basically, we're just going to be making some keyrings, magnets, or clocks, or whatever else they think of at the head office, basically. And these lighter ones over there, these are our Oloroso sherry casks. Usually those comes from Spain, and generally Spanish wines are considered as being relatively sweet and fruity wines. So this is why those spirits that will be spending some time in those casks will be attaining those sweeter, more fruitier characters to it. And depending on what type of casks will be used, it will also impact the color of the whiskey at the end. Technically, by law, we're allowed to use coloring ingredients since it does not interfere with the flavor bits of the whiskey. But in our case, everything is attained naturally depending on what type of casks we'll be using. And these four big casks over here have been here since 2001. But the spirits that are still maturing for a final year release, somewhere around 2022 and 2025, have been here on site since 1972. So basically, those spirits were the first spirits that came out from first production run when distillery was reopened in 1972. And they spent 29 years in bourbon casks. And from 2001, they've been sitting in these Oloroso sherry casks. And a few years back, we released 42-year-old Leacheck, and just before last summer, we got our 42-year-old Tobermory. So if some of you here are extremely excited about whiskey and you don't know what to do with your money, I think you came to the right place, since Leacheck comes for $3,500 per bottle and Tobermory for $2,500. But conveniently, you all have your £5 discount vouchers, might come in handy. And some of the old copper from the old stills that were replaced a few years back, some of that copper were used to engrave bottles of Leacheck 42-year-old. I guess when you're spending that kind of money, you at least want your bottle to look nice at the end. And every year we'll be losing in this environment somewhere around 1-2% of volume from the casks due to those cheeky angels that works hard every year, basically. In my opinion, they should be fired, they're taking too much of it. And All of our whiskies are classed as unchilled filtered whiskies, which means that our whiskies won't be going through that final filtration stage when those casks are going to be brought to the bottling plant, which means that they won't be cooled down and they won't be going through those filters at the end, which will help us to retain a lot of those natural oils that are in the whiskey. And essentially those oils will be carrying out the flavor that those spirits attain during maturation. And because of that, our standard year releases and some of the limited ones will be bottled at 46.3% in strength. If it would be chilled filtered whiskey, the alcohol concentration would range somewhere around 40 and 43%. I usually suggest to people to try two different kinds of it, chilled filtered versus chilled filtered whiskeys right next to each other, because the difference in terms of flavors and characters is quite significant, I would say, because when you're chill filtering your whiskey, you're basically solidifying the oils that are in the whiskey, and when they're going through those filters, some of those oils will be removed, thus some of the flavors will go away as well. And all of those distillery exclusive bottles that are single cask release every year, usually those will be bottled at cask strength, somewhere around 50 and 60%. So every year, apart of losing some volume from the casks, we also will be losing alcohol concentration as well, roughly around 1 and 2% each year. And by law, whiskey needs to be at minimum of 40% in strength. If it goes below that point, you basically spend 50 years for nothing in the warehouse, and we're back to the high quality moonshine stage basically. Our group consists out of technically five distilleries, you can say three single malt producers, Deanston, Tobermory and Boonehaven, and also blended whiskey producers, Black Bottle and Scottish Leader. All of those will come from the same group. And if you were wondering why we have South African single grain whiskey, it's because we're owned by a South African company, Distell. Initially, the whole group was formed in early 90s when Bernd Sturt Distillers bought three distilleries, Boonehaven, Deanston and Tobermory. But a few years back, it was sold to South African company, Distell.
Is anything from the Tobermory or from the Leitchik going to blends?
Leitchik to the Black Bottle. Yeah. He's been here a couple of times. All right, so we'll be heading just this way. As I mentioned to you before, you're going to be trying four different whiskies. We're obviously going to start with Tobermory one, since those are non-PT whiskies. So the first drums over here are Tobermory 10s. So if you could pass those around and share those. For those of you who are passing those around, you can take a toffee and take a cheeky nip straight away. But just smell it at first, since most of those flavors and characters will be picked up only by smelling it. And you'll most likely know that there are no rules when it comes down to whiskey drinking. Drink it whatever you like. Just please don't mix single malts with Coke, Fanta, Sprites or hand brews. Slanja. All of them will be at 46.3%, a part of Tobermory 21 with Manzanilla Sherry finish. That one is a cask strength, which will be bottled at 53.8% in total. And in terms of sort of characters of Tobermory 10, I would say that it tends to be a little bit on the sharper end, something reminiscent of that pepperish spiciness that it sort of tends to linger all over the place, but it's also quite citrusy and fruity drama, I would say. I like to call that one light summer afternoon whiskey. Good when sun is shining and it's warm outside, but unfortunately we don't have a lot of those kind of days over here. Here we go. The previous release bottles used to be like this, and we used to chill filtered this whiskey, and it used to be bottled at 40% in strength. And if some of you need some water for those couple of drops, we have a couple of jugs over here, and when you're putting those few drops of water, you'll see that the whiskey itself will get tends to get quite cloudy due to those quite a lot of those natural oils that are in the whiskey. For those of you who are done with your first drums, the second one awaits, don't be shy. I would say with Tobermory 21 year old, it will be a little bit more sort of straightforward going whiskey, like since that sharpness, it won't be sort of all over the place, but it's rather like will be felt at the tip of your tongue, and in the aftertaste you'll get those sweet sherry-like characters. But personally, this is quite weird sherry for me personally, since it does not sort of remind of those sweet fruity characters. It rather sort of brings out for me personally candy sweetness characters, like it's in the aftertaste. It's actually pretty nice. A little bit saltiness is picked up as well from Manzanilla Sherry, since Manzanilla sort of tends to have those saltier characters in general, those wines, since I think their wineries are located close to the ocean as well, or the sea. So you can pick up a little bit of those salty characters in it, but they're very subtle in terms of it. That one bottle of 19 years old is already gone by the time we walked around, unfortunately. That one had a Marsala cask wine finish. That Marsala finish tended to bring out a little bit more sharper and more fiercer characters to that 19 years old due to those Marsala cask dry characters. But for people who really like those smoky, like really harsh smokiness, they used to say that Lichak 19 tends to taste quite smooth. What do you think of the 21-year-old? Just took a sip. Yeah, like, I think when we got this first time, I didn't actually enjoy it that much. Like, I thought straight away that's not for me. Then I tried it after 3 or 4 weeks afterwards, then took it down, and then I was like sitting and all those aftertaste flavors started to develop that sweetness. It was like the first thing that popped into my mind was lollipop, those big lollipop colorful candies. I don't know, yeah, like it's quite interesting, yeah. I would say between two standard year releases, Lichak 10 years old might be even a little bit more well-rounded whiskey, because it's not as sharp as Tobermory 10, but I would say that those sharp characters are replaced with those smoky bits, and that's what smooths it out for you. But in order to enjoy Lichak, you need to like those smoky bits, because a lot of people just does not go near to them. So which one do you prefer a little bit more, Tobermory or 10 or 21?
I go with the 21.
21, yeah, 21. The third whiskey that we're going for is Lichak 10 years old, the standard year release, and that's the smoky one. I guess that's what you've been all waiting for. Here we go. It will be quite peaty on the nose, but in terms of flavors, it won't be, when you try it, it won't be as fiery as any other Isla malts, for instance. It will be a lot more smoother and a lot more easygoing next door in McCaughan's. I know that we already sold out all of the distiller exclusive ones, the 11 years old Lichak with the port pipe finish. You can try it next door in McCaughan's. I've seen that they have a little bit left of it still over there, but that one was really nice whiskey. But it was also bottled at 58.2% in strength. But in terms of flavors, like always describe it as three-stage whiskey. Like sort of at first hand you feel a little bit of that spirit concentration, but it's not over-empowering. The second bit you get the smoky characters. And then the third sort of you get those dark chocolate toffee sort of reminiscent sort of hints, because port pipe tended to give a little bit more of those licorice sort of style, a little bit more buttery sort of characters to it. And your final drams awaits, the Lichak 18 years old with the 2 year Oloroso sherry finish. This will be a little bit more sweeter, but what I really like about this one, 18 years old, is that aftertaste sort of. If you swirl it around in your mouth and you get it a little bit in front of your teeth, to get that sort of tingling sensation above it, which tends to stick around for a little bit, but also I think it's perfect balance between smoky and sweeter characters. It sort of smooths it out, that smoky bits, and it's not too harsh. It's relatively smooth and easygoing whiskey. I think it's quite interesting because they're all sort of peated. The smoky ones are always peated at 39 phenol parts per million. All those different characters, a little bit sharpness, additional sharpness from Marsala cask, for instance, for that 19 years old that we had. It's just only for the maturation sort of the cask, depending on what type of cask it spent, like those additional characters, but the bitterness levels are always the same. That's quite interesting.
Das war schon der kleine Ausflug in die Tobermory Distillery auf der Isle of Mull. Abgesehen davon, dass die Distille jetzt 2 Jahre Pause wegen der Umbauarbeiten hat, wie ihr gerade hören konntet, gibt es natürlich weiterhin ihre Standardabfüllungen und auch einige Sonderabfüllungen und sogar von unabhängigen Abfüllern die eine oder andere Flasche bzw. das eine oder andere abgefüllte Fass. Und wie heißt es doch immer auf den Whiskyflaschen in Schottland? Drink responsible. In diesem Sinne, Slandra. Im Internet zu finden unter tobermorydistillery.com. Wer auf die Insel Isle of Mull fährt, da kann man natürlich noch viel mehr machen. Und auch diese kleine Stadt Tobermory selbst, in der sich die Brennerei befindet, ist sehr malerisch und hübsch. Und da kann man eine ganze Zeit verbringen. Wer mehr in den Süden der Isle of Mull fährt, kann dort zum Beispiel das Stuart Castle sich ansehen. Das ist gleich neben dem Fährhafen Craignure auf Mull. Egal bei welchem Wetter, sehr malerisch. Jetzt gibt's noch ein wenig Musik in der ersten Stunde Lost and Found und in der zweiten Stunde den Ausflug in die Glen Scotia Brennerei in Campbelltown.
Werde Mitglied bei Radio Z.
Ich meine, wieso?
Weil Radio Z von euch, für euch und mit euch lebt.
Und wozu ist das gut? Was habe ich davon?
Du unterstützt das einzige freie Radio in ganz Bayern.
Mann, ist das schön, frei zu sein.
Du kannst über Belange von Radio Z mitentscheiden. Du kannst Gästelistenplätze für viele Veranstaltungen gewinnen.
Oh, wow.
Warum macht Radio Z keine Werbung?
Das will ich dir sagen.
Das sind die falschen Freunde. Wir werden versuchen, dich zu kaufen.
Was macht eigentlich Z so besonders?
Der macht alles anders als die anderen.
Werde Mitglied bei Radio Z.
Wie soll das gehen?
Ganz einfach anrufen. 4500633.
Man hat mir gesagt, dass meine Krankenkasse das nicht abdecken würde und dass es sowieso nicht nötig wäre.
Schwachsinn.
Beiträge und Spenden sind steuerlich absetzbar.
Bist du bereit?
Ja.
Radio Z rettet auch dich.
Ihr habt mich gerettet. Ihr seid mein Retter.
Danke, danke.
Lost and found. Found and lost. And lost found.
Hallo auch zur zweiten Stunde Lost and Found in der September-Ausgabe 2017. Und wir sind weiterhin unterwegs in Schottland in Sachen Single Malt Whisky und landen auf der Halbinsel Kintyre in dieser zweiten Stunde in der Stadt Campbelltown und besuchen dort die Destillerie Glen Scotia. Auch in dieser zweiten Stunde gibt's ein wenig Musik zwischendurch und wie schon in der ersten Stunde überwiegend von Eddie Reader. Ich wünsche viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören, am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. Campbelltown war einst eine der wichtigsten Whisky-Städte in Schottland. Die Gerüchte besagen, dass es bis zu 37 Destillen im Laufe der Zeit in der Stadt gab. Von diesen blieben im Laufe der Jahre noch drei übrig. Springbank, Glengyle und Glen Scotia. Glen Scotia wurde im Jahr 1835 gegründet. Wie viele Destillen erlebte sie wechselhafte Jahre, wurde zwischendurch geschlossen, teilweise von Springbank-Leuten wiederbetrieben und seit dem Jahr 2000 wird die Glen Scotia-Destillerie auch als solche wieder von den Eigentümern betrieben mit einer eigenständigen Crew. Die maximale Produktionskapazität liegt bei 800.000 Liter im Jahr. Auch die wird natürlich eher selten bzw. nicht erreicht, sonst müsste die Destille ja das ganze Jahr über 24 Stunden am Tag durchlaufen. Eine Besonderheit gibt es auf jeden Fall bei Glen Scotia. Während bei den anderen Destillen die Fässer im Regelfall liegen, stehen sie bei Glen Scotia aufrecht in den Lagerhäusern, in den sogenannten Warehouses. Unsere Führung durch die Destille übernahm ein Mitarbeiter, der auch in Campbelltown geboren wurde und für uns netterweise nur mit seinem schottischen Akzent, aber nicht Campbelltonian sprach. Und jetzt viel Spaß auf der Destillentour bei Glen Scotia in Campbelltown.
Yes, I am. Went to the school across the road here.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe. It depends. Yeah. My name's Archie. Local born and bred, so I'll take you on the tour and hopefully give you some information, a bit more than you don't know already, and some other bits and pieces that will hopefully make it a bit more interesting. Okay, so in terms of Campbelltown as a region for whisky, nowadays we're on the map because there is now three distilleries open again, but the history of Campbelltown is such that most people would still assume that we were, because we were originally known as the whisky capital of the world. Back in the early years, there was this, depending on where you read, there's between 34 and 37 distilleries in Campbelltown, but no matter what, more than 30, it's still a lot of distilleries, okay? We're talking inside earlier about why it went wrong and what happened, why is there not so many. There was lots of different reasons, but some of them were self-inflicted in that they didn't always make the best quality liquid that they could have, used poor casks sometimes as well. One of the other reasons was the government back then, even then, the taxes were so high that it wasn't actually viable to make whiskey. So there's a period from 1797 to 1800, so we're only talking 3 years, okay? In that period, between Campbelltown and Tarbert, which is 35, 37 miles up the road, they destroyed 297 illegal stills. So they were everywhere. But it was because the taxes were so high, the distilleries just couldn't function. They cut the tax in 1810, still not enough. 1820, and then there was a resurgence. Also, as we said, around about the harbour area, you'll see all the big houses, huge houses, and are too many for the size of this small town, but that was distillery owners and shipping agents, because the wealth in the town was so high. And what happened was a lot of the distillery owning families left Campbelltown and they moved to Glasgow and they became blenders, easy money, you know, like somebody else make the whiskey for you. Doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, we'll drop in some half-decent stuff and people will drink it anyway. So that was another reason. The Depression itself, Prohibition, all of these things added up. The way it used to work was, there was up to 5 sailing ships a week would leave Campbelltown heading for America, okay? But not purely just for Campbelltown. What they did was they left Glasgow, and they would obviously have a lot of people there, and they would still pick up people all the way down until you get to Campbelltown. So as you know, we're in the peninsula. This was the last staging post, if you like. They came in, took on water, etc. And once you come out of Campbelltown and turn that corner, it's just a straight run to America. The other thing they did was they would throw off the ballast from the ship and re-ballast using full whiskey barrels. So that's the start of the trade way back then, okay? So, okay. Now, back to nowadays, where we are now. In terms, well, I'll give you maybe some more of the distillers we used to have. Over the back of the hill here, there was one called Barrel of Greg, and that was one of the earliest. The wall that you can see here on the left-hand side, that would have been Broom Bray Distillery. Just down the hill from that is another one called Ben Moore. Where Tesco Supermarket is, one called Lock End Distillery. Behind that, Hazelburn. The buildings for Hazelburn are still there. They're now a local college and business. Yep, definitely. But if you could get inside the office part, okay? The roof inside the office is a heavily wood panelled, okay? Have you heard of the Ardshiel Hotel by any chance? The one with the 700 malt whiskies? Yep, right, okay. See the area between the bar and the dining room? That seating area, if you look up at the roof, that heavily wood panelled roof is exactly the same, because that was the owner of Hazelburn's house. Okay? But it's still there, exactly the same, still today, if you were able to get in, okay? Where the Co-op supermarket is, that was the very last one to close, called Reclachan. That closed in 1934, so just at the back end of Prohibition. Obviously, behind that, Glengyle, which is now reopened, Springbank, ourselves here, Glen Scotia, next door Lochruin, beyond that Dillantober, Glenside up here, Dillaruin up here, the list. I can't remember them all, so I'm not going to try. In terms of for us, 1832, above us you'll see where the two malting floors would have been. We don't malt our barley anymore on site, but that's where it would have went in through the hatch at the top here. Nowadays we get our barley from the east coast of Scotland, and we also get it malted there as well. The reason we don't use local barley is it's just rubbish. You know, the weather, you see it now, this is the middle of the growing season, supposedly. So when you actually get the barley, there's no real goodness in it, and it's very hard. We've tried it and it just doesn't work. It costs you too much money, and the quality you get is just not good. So we get it there every Thursday afternoon. Truck arrives, 28 tons. The hatch you can see in the road there, that's where it goes. Oh, you here, are you? All right. It's usually quite nice, because it's usually the afternoon tour time, and if we're in the shop, it goes dark as it goes past the window, and we're usually pointed. Okay, so I'll take you this way. In terms of the barley, that's what you call Concerto, and as I say, that's what comes from the same guys who supply Speyside, so as I say, we get it done there, far easier, no hassle. You know exactly what you're getting every single time, so it's very consistently, same size of grain, same amount of drying, And when we do peated, they do that as well. But it's a lowland peat, or a woodland peat rather, so it's not as intense as likes of Isla, where it's that when you see Isla peat, it's very dark, it's a bog, so really dark. But this one's like a woodland peat, so it's a lot lighter in flavour in that respect. So even our 60 ppm, which is the kind of bottom end, 40 to 60 in Isla, it's still tame, more tame than theirs, you know, by quite a wee bit. Okay, so we'll head inside. Once we get inside here, the tall guys, you need to watch out, because there's pipes. MD my height or below, you're okay, but the rest, beware. And also, the floor could be wet too, but just we'll see how it goes. We said about the 28 ton arriving. That's outside, that's the street level up there. So it comes in here, drops into the bottom of this one here, continues belts and buckets, and if you look right above your head, you'll see exactly where it goes, right up to the very top and into one of these two silos. As you can see on the silos, they both say 50 tons, and I'm telling you, we only use 28 tons a week. So why? The reason for that is when we're on peated, we do 2 weeks of lightly peated, two medium peated, two heavily peated, that is it. So we produce for 47 weeks of the year, but 41 of those we don't produce peated whiskey, okay? So it's very important we don't get cross-contamination. Really, really important to us. We've done things differently to make sure that doesn't happen. This is one of them. So on the silo, what would happen was when we're going to the peat for this, it's usually just end of April, into May when we do this, we'll pick one silo and start off with the 2 weeks of light, two medium, two heavy, in that one silo. The next load of the new non-peated will arrive in at the same time, and that will get into the other one. So once we do the changeover, we just swap onto that silo. We don't get any contamination. This one will be cleaned out, make sure it's all ready, okay? In terms of there's another reason as well. In the winter time, not so much in Campbelltown, but 100 miles from here, there's a very steep mountain kind of pass that's liable to snow or landslides. When that happens, the road's blocked, especially for bigger vehicles. So what we do is take in a bit extra prior to that and make sure we kind of cover it, okay? So in terms of the process, we use the 28 tons in a week. We do 10 mashings in the week, each mashing using 2.8 tons, okay? That process, when it's done, the guys work 12-hour shifts. There's two guys on the stills, two guys on the mashing. That's the four main guys, okay? So they work and do their 12-hour shifts. So the guy on a Thursday evening at 6 p.m. who starts and finishes at 6 a.m. on Friday will do the last of the 10 mashings, okay? At that point, he physically has to get inside the mash tun, lift all the plates, which you'll get to see, huge job, clean it all out and get it ready for Monday. But before he does that, he comes down here and sets off the process of making 2.8 ton of grist. So he gets that set up and it runs. It doesn't need to be part of that process, and then goes back and finishes that job. So that on Monday morning, once he comes in, the 2.8 ton's there, ready to go. Okay? Good. We'll head this way. Again, just watch your head. We're going to go past where the mill is now. It's going to be a wee bit tight, but we'll get round about it and you'll get to see it, okay? The hoppers are near new-ish, not that old, but they last 4 or 5 years.
Du kommst mit einer Angel weiter hin.
Ich komme hin,
mit
ja.
Angel weiter
ja, ja.
Hin.
So, if you've been to any other distilleries, you'll probably know there's usually two types of mills, a Porteous or a Bobby mill. This one here is a Robert Bobby mill. This one, it's maybe not as old as you quite think, but it's 1950, okay? But the design's a Victorian design. So the story about both of these companies is that they eventually went out of business because the mills just didn't break down. They're just so reliable. So this one here, as I said, 10 times a week, it's going to produce 2.8 tons, and it does that for 47 weeks of the year. All we ever do is oil and grease it. It gets one service a year, which is just a couple of weeks ago, and that's it. Don't touch it, don't mess with it. Just does the job, okay? So in terms of when he starts that process to produce the 2.8 tons, he's opened the slide next door. The grain will come through and it goes up the elevator behind your box here. That one goes up the top once more. Once it gets there, it gets through a machine called a dresser, and all that is, it'll take out any stones, pieces of grit. It's important with the stones that you get them out, because it's not that you would probably end up in the liquid as such. When it goes into the rollers, if it, you bust it and it sparks, it can ignite the material, so it's very important you get rid of it, okay? So once we do that, we're going to create this 2.8 tons, but we don't put 2.8 ton in one go. There's a set of scales at the top, just two trapdoors. Once they hit the weight, they'll release, but we do that 75 times to get to the 2.8 ton. Everything we do here is a wee bit slower, more controlled than some, well, a lot of our competitors. We just do things slower, more old school, okay? So you look at the machine here, you'll see the way that it comes down. So the grain comes down this way, goes that way, then this way, then that. It's all just to slow it and control it, okay? So in terms of, if it was running right now, that's the box that the grain would come down here, okay? So I'm gonna bang it, you'll see where it comes down. Even if one of these releases has just happened, that grain wouldn't come out because it's just a small amount. And that amount would be milled before the next one's released. So we're never overloading it, okay? So even if it was running right now, I could open that quite happily and it wouldn't come out. The other thing you can also, if you just want to come and have a wee look inside there, if you need, feel a need, okay?
Are there a lot of stones?
Well, I was up there yesterday and there is a small amount in the, but not much, because it's been running for a few weeks now and there's only a small amount, but it only take one to get it wrong, okay? So, I'll show you this other part here. So once it's through here, it comes in. So that's inside, okay? So you'll see the top two rollers, okay? There's another two in here. The material you're seeing here, that's not a true reflection on the end product. That's just overspill, you know, that coming off. So what we're looking for is a material that's got 10% flour, 70% gritty parts, and 20% the husks. So for that reason, the top two rollers are set slightly wider than the bottom so that they bust the husk separate. And then when it goes through the next set of rollers, not all of it will get minced up. You know, we don't want that to happen. In terms of how do we know we've got the right mixture, we have a box that we call a shugle box, okay? In Scotland, shugle means to shake. So if you shugle something, you shake it, okay? So this box has three sieves in it, three mesh, different sizes. So we've put some of the material in it, shugle it, and it'll fall through the mesh, and then that way you can tell if you've got the right mixture, okay? So in terms of the setting of the machine, you'll see here there's three different settings. There's one here, here, and here. The only person that's allowed to touch that or adjust it in any way is the manager, nobody else. But as I said to you, we're getting this consistent product week in, week out, month in, month out. So once you're on one particular type of barley, you'll probably not need to change it unless something goes wrong. So don't touch it. The other thing is, if you did, in the old days, what they used to do was they'd make a drawing of each of these three settings, just in case when they made the adjustment, it went and it wasn't right. They could at least put it back to where it was. Nowadays, we've all got our mobile phones, so you just take three pictures. Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, when you did the service, when I came in here, these were all shifted. But then when I come back in, they're exactly where they were before, okay? So that's the milling. Goes through the bottom of the machine, up the elevator behind you here, and that takes it into the grist bin. The grist bin is above the mash tun, and that's where we're heading now, okay? Thank you. See all these plates, there are about 70 of them, give or take, in the bottom here, okay? All got to be lifted, okay. Replaced.
Okay.
And this is the rakes. They turn this way, but they also turn round. Mm. You'll see all the cogs, you know, where it dries, okay? So anybody wants a wee quick look inside here, come and have a wee look, and then we'll step back and I'll explain what we're going to do when you come. So say the moment it's empty, obviously, you can see the bottom with the plates that have to be lifted. These are the rakes that rotate and turn, okay? So in terms of the process now, we're going to extract the sugars from that grist that we've produced. So we put the 2.8 ton of grist in here, and we add 8,000 litres of water at 66 degrees. The rakes that you saw inside, we'll turn those twice, then stop them, and we'll leave it for a full half hour. After the half hour, just at your back here, there's a valve, and we start opening this valve. But we don't open the valve fully. We do small movements at a time, just to slowly open it up. If you open it up too fast, the channel underneath the grist that you've created will collapse, and it'll actually be very difficult to get the material out, the water out. But it will come, but it just takes longer. So after the half hour, we'll start to run it through. It will run into the end under back at your behind you here. It comes up from the bottom, so the liquid's running from here and it's coming up, and we call it balancing. There's a point where the two liquids will come together. Usually takes about 10-15 minutes. At that point, we still leave it for the full half hour, and then we've got a bit of a problem. The problem is it's too hot, because the yeast that we're going to use activates at 17 degrees and it dies at 37. So behind you here, we run it through the heat exchanger. It's just like a big radiator. So we run it through the heat exchanger and we cool it to 20 degrees. Once we've got it to 20 degrees, we pump it into the wash bark. So that's the first waters, and it's now in the wash bark. The second waters, again, 8,000 litres, this time at 76 degrees. This time, one turn of the rakes, leave it for the full half hour, open the valve, balance it 10-15 minutes again, leave it the full half hour, put it through the heat exchanger. Now we pump it into the wash bark, and we've got 14,500 litres of sugary water known as wort, W-O-R-T, and that's in the wash bark, okay? That's that part done, but there's still sugars in here and we don't want to waste them. So what we do is we take a third and a fourth waters, both exactly the same. So 8,000 litres, 85 degrees this time, no turn of the rake, just leave it for the half hour. After the half hour, we'll open the valve, 10-15 minutes to balance it. This time, as soon as it's balanced, we start to pump it. We don't put it through the heat exchanger, and we pump it into a tank called a sparge water tank. All that means is slightly sugary water, okay? So that's gone. Fourth water's exactly the same, 85 degrees, 8,000 litres, half an hour, 10-15 minutes, balance, pump. We've now got 14,500 litres of slightly sugary water in the sparge water tank. The fifth waters is where we've now, all we're left with is the material that we put in the start, the 2.8 tonne, except now it weighs over 4 tonne because it's absorbed 1,500 litres of water. So how do you get it out of there? So short of jumping in and start shoveling, obviously not the preferred option, no, we don't. So we add another 8,000 litres of water, and this time we put the rakes on and we'll leave them on. So they churn the whole thing up and make it waterborne, and then we can pump it out. We'll pump it out into the big tank in the yard, just it's standing up. Pump it in there, and later on, one of the local farmers will come in, we'll empty the material into the trailer, and he takes that and feeds the cows. So there's no waste whatsoever. All it is now is protein and roughage, but it's moist. Dairy cows eat it, and it does help with the milk production, okay? So
do you use the heat exchanger as well to heat the next round for the machine?
Sometimes, but it's not necessary all the time. It's minimal, the amount of change we're finding, so not necessary.
What can we use to heat up your offices?
We don't have any heat in the office.
No heat in
Scottish. Okay, so in terms of the high tech, as I say, we don't really do high tech. This here is as close as you're going to get to an iPad, okay, or any computer. That's it. So if you look at it here, you'll see first 66 degrees, the second one at 76, the third and the fourth at 85, the fifth 39, 59, 50, 42. It doesn't matter about that one, we just need 8,000 litres. And as my learned friend here told you earlier, once we put in the next new batch of 2.8 tonnes, we bring back that slightly sugary water and we'll use that for the first and the second waters every time thereafter. So you're always starting with slightly sugary water, so you've wasted absolutely nothing, okay? So that's us here. Now, we're going to go through right through to the far end to the wash barks. We'll pass the stills, but we will come back to them, so don't panic. It's not that we're going to get no see. The very first one we go past is the wash still. If you take a look at the front of it and see how many litres it can take, and just remember it, that's all I'm asking at this moment, and we'll head through into the wash barks first, okay? So as you can see, the wash barks we have here, they're stainless steel. Quite often you'll see them, they're wooden lined, they're larger. We had that up until about 4 years ago, and we changed it to these. Remember we talked about the heavily peated problem earlier? So when if you've got wooden wash barks and you use heavily peated material, you will get that into the wood, okay? doesn't matter how much you want to clean it. If you try too hard at the cleaning and pressure wash it, you'll damage the wood. So you've got to be careful. So what we do is, got the stainless steel, automatic cleaning system. So once we do the heavily peated, just clean it, job done. Whereas with the heavily peated and the wooden wash bar, it's a whole different ball game. You'll get inside and you'll clean it, but for the next three or four washes, you will still get peat contamination. On Arran, the distillery there, do the exact same process as us. They have like 6 weeks where they do the same process, but they still have wooden wash bars. So what they do is, it takes 1 week, but they steam it and they steam the peatiness out, but they lose a whole week, okay? So that's the difference. So we've eliminated that problem. So the 14,500 litres of sugary water, known as wort, is now inside one of these tanks. To that, we'll add 3 bags of yeast. Each bag contains 25 kilos, 2 intermediate acting, 1 fast acting. Once we've put them in, seal it up, leave it. We'll leave it for a minimum of 70 hours, but it can go up to 100 hours at the weekend because we only run the stills for 6 days. We don't run them on a Sunday. So we'll have that extra hours that we can get. But once that process starts, you'll probably get a wee smell of it every now and again in here. There's a fruity smell that's given off. Now that's the same for everybody that's doing this job, but it's what you do with it later that determines whether you hold on to that fruitiness or don't, okay? For us, it's very important that we do, and we do things a bit differently and slower at the next process, okay? So once it's in there, the yeast started to feed and it's given off this fruitiness. But after 48 hours, it's pretty well eaten up all the yeast, all the sugar that it can find, and it's still looking to feed. So it will get into a secondary fermentation where it actually starts to feed in itself. At that point, gives off even more of the fruitiness. We're delighted because that's what we want, okay? So, as I say, minimum 70 hours. Once it's finished, it's got 8% alcohol at this point. It's been described to me as like a premium Belgian beer. Not quite sure what that looks like, but it's certainly not that pretty when you see it. You know, it's a kind of muddy water kind of look. We had some students a few months ago who were finished their exams. They came in, we did the tour, and at the time they were lucky enough that the guy was actually taking a batch out. So we took the measure of the material and they all got to drink some of it, which they all seemed to like, okay? So I've been telling people that these students thought it was really nice, but then they reminded me of two things. The first thing is they're students anyway, so basically they'll drink anything, and secondly it was free, so they're not going to complain. So that was the story. But they certainly enjoyed it. But I had a couple of Belgian guys in also, and we had the same conversation, and they said it possibly doesn't look like it, but it does taste similar. But that's about it. But at that point, it's as close as you can get to the beer process, and obviously we're going to do something different with it now. So 70 hours, 8% alcohol. It's now called wash. And we're going to head this way, okay? Okay, what I should have said in there also was, we've actually got 9 of these wash barks. There's 6 of them in there, and there's a further 3 outside, okay? So, we're going to take that 14,500 litres from there, and we're going to put it in here, the wash charger. So how many litres does we still take? The wash still, did anybody notice? 11,800. And I've just told you we've got 14,500, so we've got too much. All we do is we just split it in half, so 7,250 litres. We take that out of here and we put it into wash charger number 2. The only way we can tell how much is in this tank is by dipping it with that stick. So it's all old school, so we dip the stick in, take it up, measure it, and we know how many litres is in the tank. All the tanks in here are the same. The one behind you there, there's the measuring stick there. Obviously a centimetre in this one and this one, they're two different amounts, but we know what that is. So once we put the liquid into this one over here, we'll run it down the red pipe and we'll fill up the wash still. The remaining half we now have in here, we'll put into wash charger number 2, and that'll leave this empty so that when one of these comes ready, we can immediately put it through, so that when this guy over here is looking to put his water through, he's got space, okay? Because there's only 2 guys on at any time, so there's a lot of time they have nothing to do. There's other times they're really busy, so we've got to be careful with that one, okay? So as you know, the process is, we've filled up the still, sealed it up, turned on the steam, and we're starting to boil it up. The process is that hot vapors will gut the inside of the still, they'll go over the top, and they'll go into the condenser. The condenser's a column with lots of small pipes that are filled with cool liquid. So once the hot vapors hit the cool liquid pipes, that condenses back into liquid, and that's what you see coming back in. I'm probably willing to bet that most times you see this view here, you've never seen the condensers before, don't know what they look like. If you like to have a wee look outside there, you'll see the condensers. So if you take a wee look out, yeah, you want to just go outside and see what the condensers look like. So just take a walk out and then you can come back in again. We're just talking about the spirit safe here. Obviously the old original one from 1832 is in the shop, but when you look at it, very similar in makeup, except that was made in 1832 by a local man in the town. He made it, still there, still works. This is a newer version. We could have changed the old one to this system, but we felt it was wrong. You should keep it and let people see it, so that's why it's still there. So on here, that's the wash still running. And this is the liquid that's coming off the wash still. So the liquid's coming off of there is called low wines, and it'll come through at 20% alcohol, and it'll go into this receiver here, low wines and faints, okay? Once it comes through, as I say, 20% alcohol, and we'll keep running it through until it gets to 1%. Once it gets to 1%, it's actually uneconomical to work with. It's a waste product known as pot ale, and we'll run it into the tank behind here, the effluent tank, okay? On the spirit side here, once the liquid starts to run through, at the moment we're running faints, which is the last part of the process, but we'll just make it at the moment we're running the first. So there are three cuts to be had from this. So the liquid will run through at 74% alcohol, and at that point it's a bit too much methanol, a bit too coarse, okay? Too rough, shall we say. So what we do is for about 15 minutes we run it off, and we'll also run it in here, okay? Once he's happy that he's got rid of that first cut of the four shots, he'll turn the lever here and he'll put it onto this bowl. He's now taking the second cut or the middle cut or the new make spirit, whatever you want to call it. We'll run that new make spirit from 74 all the way down to 63. Once we get to 63, we'll turn the lever back and put it on here. That's where it is right now. It's running faints. So we'll run the faints from 63 all the way down to one again, and it's the same thing. Once we get it to one, it's uneconomical to work with. This time it's called spent lees. Same process, we'll pump it into the tank over here, and that's really the process, okay? But remember we talked about that fruitiness that we're creating up here and our desire to hold on to it. What we do is we distill at a particularly slow rate, okay? Just to give you an idea, over the road at Springbank, they're running at 290 to 300 litres per hour, okay? And that is slow, but we run at 230, really slow. And we're probably in the bottom three in the whole of Scotland for doing that. But what that allows you to do is make a really high quality liquid, but also to hold on to the fruitiness. So 230 litres an hour, or on his trusty measuring stick, 6 centimetres an hour, that's what we're looking for. So if we do that, high quality liquid, full of fruitiness, okay? We'll let you smell some of that liquid up in the shop once we're finished, and you'll be amazed at it. It's totally not what you'd expect, okay? Fine, head this way. Barker, takes it away. No waste whatsoever. So if you remember some of the processes earlier, we said about using that, reusing that water again, not wasting anything here. Everybody goes on nowadays about recycling and green energy. I had a Japanese guy last week, okay, very passionate, loving all the thing, right? When I told him this was Loch Ruin, he actually gave it a hug. He was really getting quite excited.
The Holy Land. Yeah.
The thing about Campbelltown and Japanese whiskey, the guy who's credited with being the father of Japanese whiskey trained in Campbelltown in 1920 and then went back to Japan, so that's why they like it, you know. The guy came to university in Glasgow, and he was staying with a family in Glasgow, fell in love with the daughter, married the daughter, and they went back to Japan in 1920. So, but he trained at Hazelburn, So that's the three other wash baths behind there. This is where two water tanks are hot. This is where sparred water tank, remember that's slightly sugary water. So that's them there, so that's the one we'll use to make the water. The boiler's just in here, so at the moment it's oil fired, but we're changing it to gas, but it's only a case of changing the burner over and then that producing the steam. So, in terms of the waste that comes off the two stills, that will end up in this tank here. This time, there's another farmer arrives, okay? He parks there, and he's got a big tank in the back of his tractor. I'm just watching your eyes. You've picked up on the little piece over here, okay? So what happens is, he normally arrives with his tractor, and he's got two collie dogs with him. That's the dog's exercise equipment. So the dogs get a little bit of exercise while he's filling the tank. Once he's filled the tank, he takes it out to the old airbase, and then they just spread it onto the grass. So, no waste yet again, okay? In terms of the water supply that we need, or we have, in 1860, there was a bit of a problem. There was still 21 distilleries working, and they were taking huge volumes of water. Back then, the weather was probably a bit better than it is now in the summer, so they were running out of water. So what happened was, the local council went to the distillery owners and said, you need to come up with a solution. The solution was, far side of the town, up in the hills, they dammed off an area, and they created a lock called Crosshill Lock. Crosshill Lock's only purpose in life was to supply water to these 21 distilleries. And to this day, that's exactly all it does, except for one addition, the local creamery that makes a Mullachintyre cheddar cheese. So there's only the three distilleries plus that. The water itself is particularly good in that it's up in the hills, okay? So there's no, behind it, it's all trees. There's never been any farm animals on it either. There's never been any fertilizer, so no nitrogen. No chlorine or fluoride added to the water, so it just runs off the hills into the loch through the pipe. We just take out any debris and that's it, so it's perfectly good water for what we need, okay? When we showed you the picture earlier about reclaiming the land, the area, the water used to go right up to where the Tesco supermarket is now, so that house that you can see there would have been in the loch originally, but the picture, you'll see the picture in the shop, some of you guys that saw it, and we actually they reclaimed all of that as well and created more storage space, okay? In this windows here, if you take a wee look in, especially the second one, and look at the way we store the barrels, it's a totally different from what you'd expect, okay? Just take a wee quick look in through the mesh. The guy who was the head stillman retired after over 40 years working here, okay? So the manager went into this warehouse right to the very top and he chose this cask, okay? Once we bottled that cask, after 16 years, so the Angel share, as you know, we're usually going to lose about 2% a year, okay? So this one, after, so it goes in the cask at 63.5, okay? And loses that 2% every year. So for a 16-year-old, you're probably looking at 50 or below quite easily. This one was still 59.7 after 16 years. Totally exceptional, okay? For obviously, high alcohol content, but the other thing it was full of flavours, really concentrated flavours, and the reason for that, instead of the alcohol evaporating out, it was actually the water. Where it was in the warehouse, right at the very top, getting a lot of heat, so on the days I'm in there, on the odd day that it's really sunny here, okay, the heat up in the top of that warehouse is really, really hot, it's almost like a sauna. So you would see the cask, the bung and the staves actually wet, but what was happening was they were puffing up with the pressure, the heat, and it was the water that was evaporating out. So what you're left with is this really concentrated liquid, full of flavors, so much so that you wouldn't realize it was 59.7 anywhere near it. The downside to it is though, normally you would fill 250 to 300 bottles from one cask, there was only 186, okay? But 186, superb.
Concentrated.
Yeah, yeah. We also had one at the open day in May that was 58.3, but that one we only got 170 bottles. More concentrated yet again, and if you take the bottle with 170, put it beside the 186, the 170 was darker again in liquid form because it was so concentrated. But they sold out, like they just flew off the shelves. Yeah. Okay. So, in terms of casks at the moment, we have, about 12,000 casks on site. Okay, being stored here. We produce roughly 90 to 100 casks every single week. Okay. This warehouse here, there is 7,000 casks in here, and they're done the old way, they're rolled in. So in this warehouse here, you see the width over here. So if you imagine in the middle, there's a gap this wide. Down each side, there are 35 bays each side. So there's 70 bays, but each one of these bays is 9 stories high. So there's barrels the whole way right up. The downside to it is the area that I have to work in when I'm in there is literally that. So when I'm in there, I'm in like this. The barrel weighs 200 kilos and I have to rotate it to make sure that bung ends up at 12 o'clock. Not an easy task. But the other good thing is you don't need to pay for a gym membership because you get all the workout you need.
Hallo, Sie hören Radio Z. Böse Zungen behaupten, einige unserer Moderatorinnen und Moderatoren würden manchmal stottern.
Ja.
Wir hätten Schwierigkeiten mit der Technik.
Huch, was ist da passiert?
Oder es gäbe oftmals Sendelöcher. Ich bitte Sie, seien Sie nicht so kleinlich. Radio Z ist das einzige freie Radio in ganz Bayern. Ohne Werbung, ohne Charts und ohne formatierte Informationen. Radio Z bringt politische Berichterstattung mit Hintergrund und Biss, informiert über kulturelle Ereignisse jenseits der Kassetten und spielt eure Lieblingsmusik von Akte XX bis Zosch.
Hello, you and listener.
Werdet Mitglied bei Radio Z. Anrufen unter 0911 45 0060 oder geht auf www.radio-z.net.
Get it to the end and find out that this is here. So we get it here, so we roll it back off again. Because once it's on here, you've no chance of moving it. Because there's no, the weight's just dead. 500 kilos, no chance. So we roll it back onto the flat surface and then we just wrestle with it. The other way, this is the bit in the middle. Remember I said it was pitch black? So there's two distinct warehouses. The light that you're seeing through there is the one you were looking into. This one here is just pitch black. So it's just, you'll feel the difference in the heat. It immediately gets cold once you get in here. All the way right up there, as far as you can see, is casks, and right up as high as you can see. Yeah. We were actually counting them last night. There's over 2,000 in this gap in here alone. There's a bung on the top, just sealed.
You feel it on the top?
Yeah, fill it on the top. Yeah, bung on the top. Yeah. Okay. No, when we get the barrels in from America, we have our own coopers at Loch Lomond, and the coopers removed the stave that had the bung in it. And replace it with a solid one, and then we drill a hole in the top and we put it in from the top. Yeah, fill from the top. Yeah, I'll explain this one. This one's called Victoriana, and basically, what we're trying to do here is do something that they may have done in the Victorian times, but with a bit of a twist, okay? So, in the Victorian times, green was the bottle of choice because it was cheaper and easier to make. The other thing about green bottles, if you remember old medicine bottles, they were usually brown or green. The reason for that was it was deemed that it stopped the light getting into the liquid. And so for this one, Victorian times, what happened was they didn't have Pedro Ximenes, Olorosos, Cabernet Sauvignons, Madeira cast to play with. The only way they could get the extra flavours out of the wood was to heavily char it, okay? So this one, we take 5 and 10 year old whiskies, let's say 200 casks. We put them into a big vat tank. And then we take 30% of that liquid out and we put it into first fill Pedro Ximenes sherry butts, okay? The other 70%, we take first fill bourbon casks and we literally burn the crap out of them, really heavily char them. So much so that if you see the inside of it, it's like alligator skin, you know, that kind of bust open square sort of thing. That's the way it looks, okay? That's for the other 70%. And we leave them like that for 1 year. After the year, we vat them back together, leave them for another 6 months to the marry, and then that's what you're going to get. Now, once you taste this, any smokiness that you're getting in the liquid has got nothing to do with peat. It's only to do with the charring of the wood, okay? So you'll get lots of lovely flavours in here and a nice creamy finish at the back end. 51.5 though, okay? Yeah.
So slanger.
Slanger. When we're preparing the cask for filling, we usually do about 100, as I said. So you have to open every single one with this. If you've got maybe a wee bit tense, it's quite nice because you can work it out using this. Somebody's maybe annoying you, just put their face right there. It works. So in terms of opening the cask, just watch the noise right now. What we do is we'll hit it here and here, and the bung will come out. When we're doing it outside in a hot day, when you do it, it'll actually fly right out the top of the thing. So you just roll it and see what I do, okay? That's how we open them. And this is where we're weapon of choice for taking the material out. So we lower that in. Once we lower it in, put our thumb over the end.
Und mit diesen letzten drei Schlägen ist der Stopfen wieder auf das Fass draufgesetzt und es kann bis zur nächsten Verkostung warten. Das war die Führung durch Glen Scotia, im Internet zu finden unter der gleichnamigen Adresse glenscotia.com. In Campbelltown hat das Ganze stattgefunden. Das war's auch mit dieser Ausgabe von Lost and Found hier auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z. Die nächste Ausgabe hört ihr dann, wenn ihr wollt, im Oktober, in der Nacht von Mittwoch, den 4. auf Donnerstag, den 5. Oktober. Diese Sendung nachhören könnt ihr im Internet eine Woche lang in der Radio Z Mediathek unter www.radio-z.net und danach gibt's die Sendung auch als permanenten Podcast auf der Seite mit einigen Bildern. Ich verabschiede mich am Mikrofon und Technik. Chris, ich wünsche noch eine angenehme Nacht. Slonjo.
Radio Z verabschiedet sich für heute. Radio Z sendet täglich von 14 bis 2 Uhr live auf der UKW 95,8 sowie im Kabelnetz auf DAB Plus und via Livestream auf radio-z.net. Radio Z ist ein Programmangebot von Radio e.V., der Rundfunk-Aktionsgemeinschaft demokratischer Initiativen und Organisationen. Adresse Kopernikusplatz 12, 90 459 Nürnberg. Telefon 0911 450060. Geschäftsleitung Silvia Glavion. Programmverantwortung Heike Demmel und Stefan Wagner. Morgen um 14 Uhr geht es weiter mit Radio Z auf der 95,8. Bis dahin könnt ihr im Kabelnetz auf DAB Plus sowie im Livestream die Wiederholungen der heutigen Sendungen hören. Die genauen Wiederholungszeiten der einzelnen Sendungen sind ersichtlich auf radio-z.net. Radio Z ist ein Mitgliederradio. Neue Mitglieder im Verein sind jederzeit herzlich willkommen.